Do the long, dark days of winter get you down? Low energy levels during the winter? Stay tuned to this episode. Hey there, welcome to the Inside Sport Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. This show is hosted by myself, Bob Sibahar, and my fantastic co-host, Dina Griffin. We are both registered dietitians who are board certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. We are here to translate nutrition and sports science research to real life and give you some awesome interviews with a variety of experts so you can enhance your knowledge to optimize your health, fitness, and athletic performance. On today's episode number 115, that's right, 115th episode, we are talking about the long, dark days of winter. So this is Ask Us Anything number 12 episode, and we are discussing a listener request to share information about training in the dark days of winter and having low energy levels during those times. So if you're living in an area with many hours of darkness, or you feel affected by the change in seasons, as many of us do, tune into this episode. We're going to share some tips on how to approach food choices and other considerations that may help your energy and your mood. But before we get to the show, be sure to check out Dina's Health and Vitality program for women over 40, dealing with the effects of peri and postmenopause, wanting to prevent disease such as cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's, slow the aging process through better nutrition and wellness, all of these great things. She's actually going to feature combined live and online education and coaching, and she's going to host it. Obviously, we all know Dina, registered dietitians, women's health specialist, but she also has a colleague, Kristen Wolf, who will be co-hosting. And Kristen is a licensed professional counselor and nationally board certified health and wellness coach. So if that interests you, if you're a female, 40 or older, head on over to nutritionmechanic.com. And under the services tabs, you'll find the information. Be sure to register by February 12th to take advantage of the early bird pricing. And now, on to our episode. You know, Dina, sometimes I think we are so fortunate, and everybody is fortunate, but I think we're so fortunate to live in the state we live in because Colorado has, what is it, over 300 days of sunshine for the most part. And, you know, oftentimes I don't know about you, but I feel kind of depressed when we have like a couple cloudy days throughout the year. But, you know, for other athletes around the world in different hemispheres, sometimes they have a lot of dark hours and they don't see a lot of sunshine. And that really kind of falls into the seasonal affective disorder. I mean, do you ever feel that way, Dee?
For sure. Definitely can tell a switch in maybe focus, you know, energy levels or just mojo when there's less light, when that season shifts. Even though we are lucky here in Colorado where we are, Bob, that we get so many days of sun exposure, sunlight, I should say. But it's still different even for our latitude and things, but it's respectable.
Yeah, for sure. And so we do what we want to do today is we want to answer a wonderful question that Sandra Pozabon gave us via email. And this is really pertinent for this time of the year. And basically her question was that she wants some information regarding training during dark days in the winter. Now she is in Canada from October to March. She said pretty much, you know, it's dark, it's cold. Her energy levels take a nosedive, and she just wants some extra help in terms of maybe what she can do nutritionally to keep her energy from nosediving and maybe stabilize a little bit better when all she wants to do is sleep. So we definitely know where you're coming from, Sandra. Like I said, even on the few days that we do have that are kind of gloomy here in Colorado, we feel the same exact way. But we did want to kind of throw in the whole seasonal affective disorder, which you've probably heard of before. It's called SAD, the acronym. And many people around the country and world experience this. And it's interesting, Dee, because I know my nutrition preferences change when I don't have a lot of mojo due to low sun exposure. So I completely gravitate towards number one, eating more frequently. And number two, those feeding sessions are usually more comfort-based foods. So is that kind of the MO that you have too with those kind of days?
Yeah. Also, Bob, when you say comfort foods, I think specifically too of like the warming foods, right? Like stews and soups, and just they may have rich flavors as well, but it's different than like a fruit bowl that's so refreshing. While I personally still would include fruit, it's still like for the main quote unquote meat and potatoes of the meal, it is more like a spicy or a warming kind of maybe hints of some memories, you know, like a favorite chili or something that I love from years ago. But yeah, I think the emotional connection for me too is more strong in this time of the year.
That's interesting that you kind of chose the comfort foods like soups and stews, because that's like, and I love those, but I would never classify those as comfort foods for me personally. And this is, you know, Sandra, thank you for the question, because everybody is so different, right? Mm-hmm. So comfort foods for me, when it's cold and dark, like emotionally, like I'm a little more vulnerable, right? I just don't feel as good. I don't feel as motivated. I feel like picking or grazing throughout the day. So my comfort foods are more sugar-based, to be honest with you. Like if there's cookies in the house or like whatever is sweet, like that's what I gravitate towards, which is really interesting. And that's a good way to start this, is all of us will be attracted to different, call it comfort foods or not, but different foods during these times of the year. So I guess, you know, the first thing is to maybe qualify, I guess even before this, is to qualify, are you feeling like you have this seasonal affective disorder, or it's just like a low light exposure, call it whatever you want. I guess the first step is identifying that, oh yeah, this is happening to me, because I see a lot of athletes, they're like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know. And then you start talking a little bit. You're like, okay, well, how's your sleep? And, you know, what are you doing outside and stuff like that? And they're like, well, I'm not outside because it's dark, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, so is it sunny? Is it cloudy? So you almost have to do a little more digging. But, you know, listeners, if you're that person that is maybe coming up against this, number one in this is just identifying that this is happening to you, right? Yeah. Then I think we can unlock the nutrition stuff.
For sure. And just adding in, Bob, the importance of pursuing professional help, a mental health professional here, if you are concern about this or just want a professional assessment versus our Google machine that might give some information, but there's certainly something to be said for getting that professional help and then other perhaps courses of treatment.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you definitely don't want to discount that. And, you know, once you decide upon that route, I think if we're just going to dive into nutrition, so there are a few things. And Sandra, we don't know too much about your daily nutrition habits. So, you know, take this tongue in cheek. But, you know, globally and kind of larger speak here, when it comes to nutrition in the winter months, the darker months, you have low light exposure. Obviously, I feel like we're more emotionally vulnerable to these kind of things. So, you know, the biggest thing that I really identify and talk to people about is when this happens is what is happening. Number one, like I mentioned with myself, what is happening to the frequency of your eating? So even before we look at foods and food categories and macros and all that, what's happening to the frequencies? Because, you know, I think with my example, I tend to eat more frequently. But I think, Dina, you mentioned earlier that in our talks before we hopped on that, you know, you've seen individuals who don't eat as much during these times.
Yeah, with a suppressed appetite, or maybe it is also just related to like the desire to prepare food or think about food. Yeah, it's just there's definitely a suppression there of maybe many angles to the nutrition elements. So, yeah, figuring out where you're at by some awareness and observation.
Yeah. And I think it's important to realize also, what do you do during the day? So if you are in, for example, if you're working from home, that's going to present a different set of challenges than if you're working in a facility, right? Because, and let's break this down. Like I'm just thinking of my example on the days where I do not work from home, you know, I bring my food, I bring my snacks. But if I'm faced with a little bit of low light exposure or darkness or just one of those days, right, and not a lot of sunshine, and I'm kind of feeling a little emotionally vulnerable, I actually usually end up bringing more food, right, and more snacky foods. And it's a little different, which we'll get into, like my composition is different with macros, with carb, protein, and fat. And that kind of encourages me to kind of graze throughout the day, even when I'm not at home. Now, of course, it depends on meetings and everything else, like how much you'll get to eat. But I think, you know, on the flip side of what you were saying, for that person who does not eat a lot, and if they're outside of work, working in a facility, then they may have their suppressed appetite might actually lead to easy symptoms to pick up, like low brain energy or cognitive dysfunctioning, or, you know, I call it head in the clouds kind of a thing. So they may be able to pick up on these signs of like, oh, you know, maybe these biological signs are triggers or opportunities for me to say, maybe I do need to eat something, right? So I do think it depends on where you're at. And, you know, in contrast, that if you're at home, oh my gosh, I mean, Dina, what happens when we work from home? And I mean, it could get crazy, can't it?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of eating frequency or how many visits, you know, setting a PR, how many visits to the fridge can I make today?
Exactly. Well, and sometimes I have to make certain, and I have to, like, on purpose, I have to make sure that I do not go near the kitchen. So in my path around the house, like, I have to kind of be like, oh no, I cannot do this because it will drive me into wanting to be in the kitchen more, right?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. So yeah, I think what you're saying too, Bob, is so great. Like, just the starting point of awareness, observation, kind of getting a feel for what your eating frequency is, desire to eat or lack thereof, perhaps for some of us, and kind of starting there, tying it to energy levels to see if there is a pattern that can be interrupted or disrupted, meaning maybe changing time of intake of food, composition, or just seeing, you know, what's going on in between eating sessions, all the other things that we're doing in the day.
Yeah. And obviously there are some triggers to eating, or not eating for that matter. And, you know, stress is a big one. So we don't want to really highlight that. We all know that, but I think that's a whole nother episode in itself, you know, stress eating. But I do think when we talk about the composition of foods, you know, looking at putting it in context, like you all know by now, listeners, that, you know, controlling and optimizing blood sugar is the main thing you really want to focus on most of the time, right? I'd say 90, 95% of the time. Mm-hmm. And with that comes, you know, really picking your carbohydrates, your proteins, and your fats. So if we can kind of put the macronutrients into the context of this low light exposure, seasonal affective disorder, just low energy, low motivation, let's pick with carbohydrates, D. Let's start with carbs. You know, what is going on in this type of situation and the link or the association to certain types of carbohydrates?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can't read my mind, obviously. So the affinity, you know how we, and you mentioned your fruit bowl earlier. I'm like, oh yeah, fruit, that sounds really good. But, you know, when it's cold and dark, you know, to your point, I'm like, I don't know if I want to eat fruit. Like, I want to eat a cookie. I want to eat a muffin.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So usually what we end up doing in those cases is our choices of carbohydrates switch from that whole nutrient dense vitamins, minerals, fiber to our very refined processed carbohydrates that will give us sugar, obviously, but it's not going to really help us contribute to optimizing our blood sugar because of this whole seasonal affective disorder, or as we're saying, just kind of low energy and it's dark outside and just low motivation. So I feel like we gravitate more towards these processed refined carbohydrate sources, which is just gonna, I mean, it's a bad pattern, right? And I know for myself too, if I eat a cookie, I'm gonna eat another cookie, and I might actually end up eating another cookie. It just feeds on itself, right? Yeah. Whereas like something like your fruit bowl example, I'm gonna eat a bowl of fruit and I'm probably gonna be pretty satisfied for many different reasons, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the biggest things I see personally with individuals in this situation is carbohydrate choices stray a little bit from their norm, right? So now they're you know, visiting the snack room at work, or, you know, someone brings in cookies or muffins or cupcakes at work, and they're like, oh yeah, I'll have some of those, because they are in a vulnerable time emotionally.
It's kind of like feeding the fire, right? Because once you get it going, you kind of got to keep it going. And so, yeah, for some people, for sure, that first step in selection of carbohydrates, it's almost like trying to override what our tendency is. But yeah, we're also not saying you shouldn't ever have some kind of miss or comfort food that might fall into that classic processed food. It's just like trying to maybe prioritize intentionally what we're choosing for carbohydrates. We get a little bit more nutritional bang for our buck, help stabilize blood sugar, maybe not feed the fire to the point where it's too wild in terms of then omitting or not getting the other kinds of nutrient dense sources that may actually help the situation much more.
Yeah. And I think a good rule of thumb is, listen, you're going to have a mess. Like it's inherent. Like it's going to happen. It's almost unavoidable, right? You're going to have it. So my rules or my flexibility with rules, patterns and suggestions would be start your day off with nutrient dense carbohydrates, right? Because you don't want to start your day off with a miss. Because if you start your day off with a miss, most likely that's going to lead to more misses and more misses. Just like you said, it fuels itself. The fire fuels itself. So save your misses for some other time of the day, because that breakfast let's just call it the first feeding of the day is so important to set up your day with success. So choose those nutrient dense carbohydrates first. I wouldn't necessarily expect a miss because the days will be different. I mean, we've had days where it's been like a week without sun. And I mean, I can't imagine more than that personally, just because we are blessed to live in Colorado. But, I know as the week goes by or a few days go by, like my mood gets worse and worse. Right. And I catch myself like I want to, eat those white processed bagels, or I want even a donut in the morning as the days go on. But listeners, protect your morning, to protect your morning carbohydrates and routine. So that's the big thing with carbohydrates. Relative to protein now, as everybody knows, we are so protein focused. And, what I'd like to say about protein, and probably similar to what you're going to say, Dee, is again, starting off the day, not just with protein, but with a good amount of protein. Because, and I'm sure you've seen this, Dee, like a lot of people will have, I had an egg. Well, great. Is that it? Like you only had 6 grams of protein?
Right.
So it's a great intention. But when these vulnerable, emotional vulnerable times are happening, you want actually more protein in the morning with your nutrient dense carbohydrates to stabilize and optimize blood sugar for the long haul, for the entire day, right? You want to set it up properly. So what say ye, Dina, about eating protein in the morning during these states?
No, I'm with you, Bob. Making it a good portion of your first meal of the day, I think, even if it's multiple sources of protein, but really, whenever it is that you opt to have that first meal of the day, which could be, in line with what we were saying earlier, is take a look. Are you perhaps waiting too long to have that first meal of the day? And especially if you are doing some morning training or exercise, what's going on around your sessions? Because perhaps you're missing out on sufficient carbohydrate or quality carbohydrate and the protein piece. And then that is setting the tone for the day, the rest of the day, I should say, that's maybe not helping our situation or how we're perceiving our energy levels. So I think these are great like checklist items for the nutrition piece, is looking at this morning meal and seeing, identifying what your proteins are, timing, and so forth.
Yeah. And Dina, when you're talking, it just reminded me of something. A lot of times our listeners do exercise at dark 30 in the morning. I work with a lot of college athletes and they lift between 6 and 7 a.m. in the morning. And like there's a big, it's just a big opportunity to make mistakes, right? Only because it's so early in the morning and you don't want to do anything. Like I really don't like to train or exercise in the morning, but I do sometimes. And then the conundrum is, well, what do I eat? Oh, I'll just grab a bar. This is what I wanted to get at, Dee. A lot of our listeners are just grabbing bars. And even if they're protein bars, right? Those are not the same as food. And here's why, because a lot of the bars that you'll eat, and not that they're not beneficial, because sometimes it's actually better to have something like that than nothing, right? But I want to say, and if you're like me, I can eat a protein bar and then I can eat another one and another one. It's almost like a donut for me, right? Or a cookie, right? Even though there's protein in there, there's usually a lot of sugar. And what do we know that really facilitates our eating patterns? It's sugar, it's fat, and it's salt. So when products have those three nutrients in it, usually it drives us to eat even more. So again, not discounting using a protein bar very strategically in the mornings or for snacks, but just know that sometimes even though you might be getting 20 or 25 grams of protein in that bar, you actually still may be hungry because it's not satisfying some other nutrients that you need. So the, usually, not all the time, D, but usually those bars are also not too high in fiber, right? So it's not providing us a lot of nutrient-dense fiber that helps with digestion, but it also stabilizes blood sugar. So I just wanted to bring that up because I know a lot of my athletes actually will go to the bars. And again, sometimes that better than nothing, absolutely. But then I feel like, okay, after the workout, a really good breakfast should be placed in there somewhere that is protein-focused. Yeah.
Yeah.
But can I just get on my soapbox one more time, Dee? I mean, and let's put us on the hot seat. Like, I get it. Like, I battle with this every single morning, which is probably why I eat almost the same exact thing every morning. Because number one, I know it works for my digestive system. Number two, I know I'm getting enough protein and density and the other nutrients. But there's just, listen, in the United States, there aren't a lot of protein options for breakfast. I mean, what are we limited to? Eggs, protein powder, right? I mean, what else? Eggs, bacon, sausage, and protein powder. What else can we think of that, like, do you fall into the same category? Like, I have a smoothie almost every morning with 50 grams of protein. But that's just because I don't want to eat eggs every morning. You know what I mean? I just think we're limited, whereas other countries sometimes have a little more flexibility with that. Not all the time, but you see what I'm saying here? It's a pain point. Breakfast is a pain point for protein.
I know. I try to encourage everyone to think out of the box and try different things. Like you're saying, even the European style breakfast, sometimes depending on country, it's like meat and cheese, you know, with toast or whatever. But then when you throw in vegetarian or vegan options, or like, well, that is actually gross sounding for some people, it's the porridge is, right? The oats and the mueslis, but those aren't on their own traditionally nearly enough protein. So yeah, it can be a conundrum for sure.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, the message is, yes, we want you to get more protein in the morning because that really does start your day and it really helps with blood sugar control and mood control. But we do realize it's difficult. I think, you know, listen to some of our older podcasts. We talk about protein quite a bit. We just did some meal ideas and planning, you know, recently. So you can check out that podcast just to help you kind of navigate not only throughout the day, but really that morning time. So I feel like, you know, carbohydrates, we want to reduce the refined sugars. Protein, we want to make sure we get enough of it, especially earlier in the day, right? Yep. What about fat? I mean, that's kind of a nutrient that not many people think about. And unfortunately, I still think it's kind of poo-pooed, right? Which it shouldn't be at all. But what do we want to say about fat and this whole seasonal affective disorder, energy, you know, crashes?
I mean, Bob, I
know what I want to say, but go for it.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm like, ooh, I'm just thinking of omega-3 intake and thinking of olive oil, which is, you know, maybe more of a monounsaturated fat, but there is some research, you know, looking at association or correlation sources and quality of fat intake as it relates to mood disorders or mental health. And so it's just an opportunity to, again, as if you're affected by the change in the seasons, looking at the source of the fats that you consume and seeing if there are a couple swaps that you can make or introduction of perhaps some of these more brain supportive type of fat in our nutrition patterns.
It's so important. And we've talked about omega-3 fats before on previous episodes. And wow, what a powerhouse fat. I mean, brain health, cardiovascular health, inflammation. I mean, reducing inflammation. I mean, the fat, it's amazing, right? And that's, you know, when you're talking, I was like, oh, you know what? What a great breakfast, and kind of outside the box, probably more European or definitely not United States based, but is what about salmon? Having salmon for breakfast, right? So you can make smoked a couple salmon. Different things. Yeah. Like smoked salmon. You could do salmon on some whole grain bread. So many different things you can do with salmon. It doesn't have to be like, oh, salmon and broccoli, right? You can kind of make it breakfast-esque, but it would be more of a savory, because I know a lot of the athletes I work with almost want to get away from the sweets in the morning and favor more savory. So it's either that, and you know, some other things popped in my mind when you said omega-3. I'm like, oh, so you could easily do some sardines in the morning. And all of our listeners just went, Oh, did he say sardines?
They might have hung up.
Please do not, do not unfollow us. Do not unsubscribe from our podcast because I said that. I am merely stating a fact that sardines are high in omega-3s. You can eat them anytime throughout the day. But no, I mean, omega-3s are great. The point that I wanted, or two points I want to make with fats is, number one, I feel like a lot of people are still focusing on these 0% fat or like no fat, low fat, whatever. And like, I get the reasoning, right? But it's a little bit more old school reasoning. Like the old school reasoning is, oh, I have high cholesterol, I have high blood lipids, I can't do a lot of fat. And, you know, no, right? I think what we're saying is the right type of fat is what's necessary, right? And in yeah. fact, we need a balance of our fats, of our saturated and our mono and our polyunsaturated fats. But don't be scared of fat. And in fact, a lot of the people I work with, if they're fat phobic in the morning, and they don't eat enough protein, guess what happens? They become extremely hungry like an hour and a half after they eat. And now what are we favoring? We're favoring this higher frequency, which is probably going to lead to more processed, refined carbohydrates because they're in a very vulnerable state again, right? So don't be afraid of fat. Choose the right types of fats. But I would almost say start your morning by having fat. So whether it's a salmon, whatever, or if it's scrambled eggs, personally, like in smoothies, the way I get my fat is putting either some type of nut butter, or I will actually put olive oil in there because all the other ingredients I have, except for my my fat-based plain Greek yogurt, there isn't a lot of fat, right? So if you do make smoothies, just keep in mind that you're not going to get a lot of fat in there. So you have to add it in there. Now, another case for this is, well, what if you're that person flying through Starbucks drive-thru, right? You're getting a Venti, whatever. I don't even know these things do. So, because I don't go there. But maybe you're grabbing like an egg bagel or an egg sandwich, right? Or something like that. Just remember, like, fat is a very necessary component because in addition to all the other wonderful things it does, it helps you stay full. And if you are staying full and you're optimizing your blood sugar, you're going to reduce your energy spikes, your highs and lows, basically. So again, back to Sandra's question, you know, making sure that she focuses on lower refined processed carbohydrates, really trying to get those nutrient dense, high fiber sources, starting her day off with ample protein and making sure that she adds some fat, not only in the morning, but throughout the day to help stabilize her satiety or her feeling of fullness. All of this will help her keep her energy level high. And, you know, aside from sleep, which we aren't really going to touch on, that should improve your energy levels throughout the day. I mean, it's not simple because we're battling with our brain, but, you know, choosing food, I think, is simple. It's the why behind choosing food that is difficult. So anything else to add to that, Dee?
I mean, I think we could sneak in a little statement here about looking at use of some supplements or even just knowing what our blood biomarkers are for some of the basics, like vitamin D and maybe B12 or iron, some of those micronutrients that we can measure easily through blood testing. There are other tests we could use for looking at an array of other micronutrients, but we could start with basics, just knowing, oh, we're going into the season or maybe we're in the middle of the season. What's going on with some of those micronutrients that do affect energy, brain, cognition, and things of that nature?
Yeah, so that's a great point. So you mentioned vitamin D, so important, because how many of us are vitamin D deficient? I mean, Dina, I actually supplement with vitamin D, and I'm in Colorado, right? So I know, like, I have a genetic, you know, spelling error on my vitamin D pathway that kind of forces me almost to take a supplement because I have lower levels, even living in Colorado. I can't imagine living in a very darker, you know, non-sunshine climate. I just can't imagine that. So that's a huge one. Yes. Great way to bring that up is have that measured. You did mention iron, and I find that irrespective of gender, I feel like everyone should have their iron stores measured because, especially if you're in a training phase, because those can take a hit. You know, I think it happens more so with the female who is menstruating, obviously, but I think, you know, like, I've seen a lot of male athletes who have low iron levels also. So yeah, vitamin D, we've got iron panels. You said, you know, like B vitamins, like vitamin B12, maybe some folate. hemoglobin, hematocrit. I'll just echo this, Dee. Those are so easy to have measured at your doctor's office, physician, whatever biomarker testing facility you're going to. I would even say this, Dee, maybe what, 2-3 times of the year, maybe have those done to maybe just mm-hmm. check on them, make sure your nutrition is supporting those levels.
Yes, for sure. So important.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point.
And then, yeah, of course, we want to be careful here when we're talking about supplements, because we're not encouraging everyone to just go start 20 random supplements right. that have some marketing claim to help with either seasonal affective disorder or just like managing this time of the year when we have less light exposure and so on. But there are a few kinds of supplements that could be helpful. But again, you want to work with the proper health professional, you know, registered dietitian, sport dietitian, or other qualified professional to make sure that any kind of supplement you introduce is working for you and not against you, or any kind of counter effect to medications you might be taking.
Yeah, it's a good point, because don't we see a lot of people just kind of pull the trigger really quick and say, oh, I heard Dina talk about vitamin D. I'm just going to start taking vitamin D. Yeah. Like all the supplements we just mentioned, those actually should be measured first to justify and validate if you need to take them, and then how much make the dosage. So don't you always hear people say, oh yeah, I'm taking vitamin D. And you're like, well, how much?
Yeah.
Crickets, right? They're like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should know this, because some of these vitamins and mineral and these things, like, you can overdose. These are toxic sometimes, right? So you need to kind of start with that basic biomarker testing. And Sandra, that might be great. You didn't mention that in your question, but that would be a fantastic way to begin this whole process to see if you have any nutrient deficiencies.
Yeah. You want to add anything in here, Bob, regarding circadian rhythm or light exposure, or maybe even just sleep schedule?
Yeah, I think it's so important during these times of the year to develop a new schedule, right? So call it like summer and winter. Let's just make it easy, right? So I think you have a certain summer sleep schedule and sleep hygiene, like habits, and then a winter one, because we know as the days get shorter, I know personally that I'm actually pushed to go to bed a little bit earlier. So that actually disrupts my sleep hygiene or my protocol, because everything is now pushed up earlier. Whereas later, right, we have more light in the day, we're staying up later, maybe we're getting up earlier, or we're getting up later also. So I think looking at number one, does the concept of having less light affect your sleep time? And if so, back up your schedule accordingly. So I'm a big fan of keeping the same schedule, but you really look at the, when do I need to start it? So like in the wintertime for me, I start my sleep schedule, my whole routine, at 8:30 p.m. Whereas in the summertime, I usually start it at 9:30 p.m. right? Because I'm trying to respect more of my circadian rhythm, wanting to actually, you know, have more of that parasympathetic nervous system drive and go to sleep and start that earlier when it is darker. Do you do anything with your sleep?
I do tend to wind it down a little more soon in the winter months. It's kind of like what you're just saying, kind of back tracking or back thinking, back planning. I'm not sure what.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, kind of, I mean, it's okay to sleep a little bit more in those times, right? I mean, especially if you have the opportunity and you can support your needs a little bit better. There's nothing wrong with winding it down sooner and getting an extra half hour of sleep during those winter months. I tend to, I was just thinking of recent weeks, Bob, it might be between 8 and 8:30 that I'm starting that shutdown for the day.
Yeah. You know, one thing I've learned is if you are in a location that does the time change, which I can't stand, by the way, I'll go on record of that. Yeah. But I know when fall hits, you know, when we fall back an hour here in Colorado, both time changes really mess with my body, but it takes me a good month to really accommodate my body to the new schedule. And I'll tell you, this past fall, Dina, when that time change happened, I was actually sleeping instead of around 7.5 to 8 hours. I added about an hour, and that was just my body waking up. So I added, you know, about 8.5 to 9 hours a night of sleep without me trying to do, I didn't change my sleep, nothing, but my body wanted that extra sleep. because of the darkness, right? Because again, your body is kind of, I mean, when darkness hits, what do we want to do? We want to start resting. I mean, that's a circadian rhythm pulling in there.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking too, during the day with less light, depending, like for Sandra and maybe others in Northern Hemisphere, I guess for our winter months, Bob, is thinking of those light therapy boxes.
Oh, yeah.
That you can get for your desk or your workspace or whatever. And those, depending on the lux, that unit of measurement to gauge the light, I forget the terms here, but that can be helpful for supporting your eyes and the photons and everything that help with regulation, even though like your natural light outside may be more limited, you can look into some of those things for some extra support.
That's a great point. Like, cause you just, I mean, the message is to go outside first thing in the morning and let your eyes be exposed to sun. And if you don't have sun, that's where this light comes into play. That's a great point. I know a lot of people in the Pacific Northwest use those quite a bit, but that's a great tool regardless. I think for a lot of people, if you're experiencing more of this seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah,
or just low energy. I mean, disorder, it's not like a bad thing. Like we all go through it, right? But if you're not like, or if you're like, you know, I don't think I have that, but if you have some serious energy highs and lows and you are controlling your blood sugar and you're getting good sleep, like maybe it is as easy as just this lack of light exposure.
I think, message here, awareness, observation, taking a look at some of the nutrition components that might seem elemental, but they're fundamental to supporting energy and brain and cognition and so forth, and then going from there. But sometimes it's like the small things can make a big difference in managing through these kinds of days.
You know, that's a good life lesson. Small things make a big difference. And we know that though for everything, right?
I am going to take that to heart myself.
Take that to heart,
Dana. Yeah.
Absolutely. You should, as should all of our listeners. Well, Sandra, we so appreciate you, number one, listening to our podcast, and two, submitting your question. And please, listeners, if you do have a question and you know that we can turn into an Ask Us Anything episode, please just email us hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. We'd love to answer your questions. For those of you who have submitted questions and we haven't answered them yet, we're getting there. We promise you, right? And we're just, some of them, we're just trying to find a little bit more context so we can kind of get a little bit more information. We actually might even contact you to get more context, but we definitely appreciate your time. Please, this 2024 is going to be a fantastic year. We've got so many great guests and so many great topics to talk about. So keep listening and we will catch you on the next episode. Well, we hope you enjoyed episode 115, where Dina and I talked about the long, dark days of winter and what you could do nutritionally to help mood during those times. Stay tuned for next week's episode, where Dina and I sit down and dissect a new research paper that just came out about one of our favorite topics, protein. So this isn't just the run-of-the-mill paper. This is actually quite an interesting paper that will have many research projects stemmed and off of this specific one, because it's challenging the upper limit of how much protein to eat after workouts. So you are definitely going to want to stay tuned and hear all about what we have to say about that, because there are some interesting conclusions. Now, if you do have a sport nutrition question, you can email us hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. And we love your questions. So you can ask us just about anything when it comes to anything sport nutrition related. We would also love your support in promoting our podcast. So if you go over to your favorite podcast platform of choice, give us a 5-star rating, give us a review. It really helps us spread the word to other people around the world to share our podcast with them. You can also head on over to our website, insidesportsnutrition.com, where you can find all of our awesome show notes, great resources, some discounts we have with some of our partners. It's just a great, great, great resource for you to catch up on some previous episodes that we have done. If you would like more information about what we do, Dina and I, in our respective businesses, head on over to nutritionmechanic.com to view all of Dina's nutrition and coaching physiological testing services, and head on over to energyperformance.com. That's E-N-R-G, performance.com, to look at all of my nutrition coaching, physiology testing, and endurance coaching options. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the host and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.